Kill. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Kill Shovel.
How are you?
I'm Donald.
I'm Dill.
And we coming at you live.
Yeah.
live pre-recorded on this our final regular review show of 2021. We made it.
We did. How the hell? What kind of year was this?
I don't want to start.
Was it quick for you?
On a downer, but it was a tough old year. Mm. It was a tough year.
I missed like half of it because of injury or illness related shit.
Yeah, you had a real kind of lingering Victorian style illness.
Well, here we looked at we got our Spotify Wrapped. Like that's the whole thing we do, right? That's our main way to get to music, mainly.
Yeah, for sure.
I looked at that and I was like, all these most listened to songs are the ones I had to rely on when I was like most ill during the start of the year. Like,
oh yeah.
All I had to kind of get through the motions was the music.
Yes.
So I saw a lot of the tracks my main picked ones were from. Specifically that I hadn't listened to afterwards because I didn't want to relive that.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I didn't listen to that past May, so, but a lot of them showed up, right?
That's really funny. I had a similar...
Including my own song.
Including your own song. Well, we might as well do, just as a very, very briefly, we might as well do Spotify Wrapped just to... you know, just as that's a fun little
yeah,
aside.
Quick one.
You just on that theme. I was rather similar myself. It just in terms of, you know, you were saying that the artists that you leaned on in tough times, I think, were the ones that ended up being at the top. Like for me, my top three were all artists that I listened to when I was going from work in a job that I didn't find massively fulfilling.
That's okay.
To put it mildly, and then going straight into, you know, college lectures. So you know, you'd be doing these like sort of 12-13 hour days. So I really leaned heavily on Hello Meteor, by the way, if you're listening. Brilliant electronic artist. Then DJ Sabrina the Teenage DJ, famously my my mental health pick. And then Uppermost, who, you know, is always my go-to. Those are my top three. And then, you know, we talk about comfort. My 4 and 5, The Beatles and George Harrison. So 2021 was a year of...
I saw your genre, Beatlesque.
Beatlesque, yeah.
Is a thing, right? We always struggle for that word.
Beatlesque. Well, listen, if the Beatles and Beatle-adjacent projects qualifies Beatlesque, then that was probably my number one genre. But I think my top five very much like comfort music, that kind of warm blanket music that you just need to cope. And 2021 was a year to cope in, yeah.
And mine were Meshy Smile, which... That was the one I listened to so much in month.
Yeah.
Non-stop because we had to wait.
That one is definitely more, I'm down right here in the dumps with you. May She Smile, I felt terrifying to listen to.
Yeah. We were on a good stretch of that kind of style of music at the time.
Yes.
Tumelo is number 4 because I've been on a weekly jam with Tumelo since the album came out.
Yep.
And I'll continue to be the way it is.
Yep.
Number 3 was Booktick because... They're my favorite, and they finally got all their stuff released on Spotify, so I slammed through the whole discog.
Yep.
Number 2 is Perfume. Just spiraling off of like a 3-EP song or a 3-song EP into like this.
We may be
nostalgia.
Talking it. We'll be definitely. I think we'll be talking about that EP again.
Yeah. And Don Broco is number 1 because I rediscovered a joy for them.
That's great, man.
What the hell? Right?
Zero to Hero. I'm so glad that Don Broco were your number 1.
Those singles that came out, trickled throughout the year, they were the constant. Manchester Super Red and
Gumshield. Yes.
Just undisputably does jams.
Definitely. That's really interesting. And funny
Manchester Super Red, Gumshield, Room to Dream, Come Alive, Rave Shit.
The really funny thing about mine was there was actually no crossover whatsoever between my top artists because if you kind of just take actually for every single one of those, so Hello Meteor, DJ Sabrina, Uppermost and the Beatles and George Harrison, like all of them I would listen, I would just binge album after album after album, track after track after track, whereas my top songs, my, you know, I don't want to give the game away really, so I'll just say that my top songs did feature some of the artists that I think we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks time.
Was one of your songs in there?
No, I don't listen to my own stuff on Spotify. I listen to that shit on Google Drive.
You're right. Yeah,
I don't want to poison my
That's
rap.
That's true.
I think that happened in 2017, and I said never again. I want this to be pure. But there's a few. I was really happy with the amount of representation for kind of local artists there was in my top songs. And then this is maybe the first year where I really think my top two songs were my top songs were the best songs of the year. Usually it's, I sort of look at my top songs and go, really? That one? But this year it was, no, that's the best song that was written this year. So that's always nice.
Yeah. And some quick news. I watched the first bit of a Beatles Get Back, and as a non-Beatles fan,
watching tomorrow morning, but yes, go ahead.
I will say what I enjoy about it the most is watching kind of like a mirror of musicians.
Yeah.
Because they're all like pointing at each other through mirrors, kind of right. in like a very creative, messy way that we're privy to because we are musicians who have been stuck in a room songwriting. We know the pain of that and how four different musical things go together.
Yep.
And this is the Beatles doing it, so that's exclusively what the documentary is.
Mm-hmm.
Like fly in the wall style stuff, and it's great. I love it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've heard really good things, and I'm so excited. I've parceled out some
time. It's
fun
seeing the
tomorrow.
Beatles doubt their abilities.
That's the thing. They were never, that is the funny thing. The Beatles were never a jam band in the sense that we think, you know, they were never a band that did that, what they were asked to do in Twickenham, which was sit around in a room and come up with songs from scratch. They would noodle away mostly by themselves and bring, you know, fully formed ideas that would then be, you know, added to. So watching, I've seen little clips. I mean, watching Paul write Get Back from scratch, you know, on the Rickenbacker was just very amazing to watch. And he's doing that thing of just, you know, gobbledygook over some chords, and then eventually you find something that you like and you keep going with that. But that was not their natural habitat at all. So it was really interesting. I'm very excited to watch it. I've actually read a book, Ken McNabb, I think it's called, and in the End. Really good book, and that's all about the same period of time that film is set.
Now you got the visuals to
now
it.
Now you get the visuals and you get all the... Yeah,
thank
so
you,
excited.
Thank you, Mickey Mouse, for that. Disney Plus.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, for once, Disney Plus is becoming a little bit more worth it.
Yes.
Despite the Marvel stuff, now Beatles.
I don't want to rob any lines. And actually, I will just, as a bit of news, since we're talking about the Beatles, I did get the opportunity to go to one last live event before they were banned again. I went to see the Beatles Festival in Dublin last weekend. And as part of that, the Nothing Is Real podcast did a live recording, and they were talking about the Beatles in Ireland, and they were, you know, talking about Get Back and stuff, a little bit about Get Back, and that, you know, it essentially was going to be a movie, and we're all so glad that it's on Disney Plus so that we get the full experience, the full three-part series.
Yeah, it's long-winded, but in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to give a special shout out as well to an artist called Fiac Moriarty, who played I think it was a 5 or 6 song acoustic set as part of that event as in the Beatles Festival. It was absolutely incredible. I've never I've seen people be very dexterous on the acoustic guitar, but to see somebody playing, I mean, we're not talking about, this was not obvious stuff. He was playing, you know, Eleanor Rigby, Honey Pie, Day in the Life, All My Lovin'. He played The Long Winding Road, and he was almost
special stuff.
He was almost playing both guitar parts and bass parts, like, and the bass part on an acoustic guitar. The arrangements were amazing.
Andy McKee style.
Was it quite finger style, but it was just incredible use of weird tunings and voiced chords to bring out that full band sound from one instrument, and he smashed it. So great, really, really talented guy, Fiac Moriarty. But that's enough about the Beatles, my all times. I'm very excited to watch Get Back and continue to remain obsessed with them, but
someday we'll do them. Someday we'll cover Beatles.
Oh yeah, we need to pick the right, you know what I mean? We need to pick the right thing to cover. I think it might be Beatles for Sale. I think that's always what we're talking about, but we'll get to that another time. I haven't even done the splash line for what we're doing this week. So we've got new albums to review from Failure, Snail Mail, Man with a Mission, Portico Quartet, and Of Love. Everybody, right?
Yes.
So that's it. That's exciting. We've got no Time Machine this week because God knows we've left stuff off the table that we wanted to cover. Busy.
If it wasn't for it happening in the next 2 weeks, I would have been like, oh, shit. we're throwing that away this week. No, it'll come back. We'll talk about some of these albums that we haven't.
So I think probably some of the stuff that got left on the table this week may make a reappearance in a few weeks, because this is our last show. As I said, it's the last regular review show of 2021, and we'll be coming back in a few weeks' time. We like to give ourselves give or take a month to think about top 20s and really put the time and the effort. Because this year, I don't know about you, Dil, but this year my long list is so long.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I saw the amount of music you listened to.
Yes, 55 straight days.
I did not. I was like 29, you were like 86.
80, yeah.
So you got quite a bit more in me this year.
That's like 1,000. Yeah. It was hovering around the 80,000 minutes mark. So it was a lot of stuff to listen back to. And that's not including, I can't wait for the Last FM stats, by the way, because those are the real ones. I listen to a lot of vinyl and other things like Power Amp or whatever, YouTube music. So it's not just the Spotify listens, but that's just humble brag. But let's talk about the albums that came out in the last couple of weeks.
A humble brag for damaging your ears.
Yeah, basically. Listen at a reasonable volume, thank you. So let's talk quickly, very very quickly, about some music that's coming out next Friday, December 10th. As we're listening to this, it's next Friday. But if you have enjoyed the musical stylings of Drying Weather this past year, we have one last hurrah before the end of the year. We've got a new single called Dust Bowl. I sing on this one.
Yep.
This is one we debuted at our gig in Berlin, and it's kind of a little bit more of a slow jam, but we're really proud of it. And you know, if you are on, you know, it's on all streaming platforms, Bandcamp. There's a music video that we made of us kind of running around Berlin, and all the various things we got up to when we were in Berlin. So keep an eye out for that. The song's called Dust Bowl, and the band, as always, is called Drying Weather. So check that out.
Get hype.
Yay. So now for an actual album. Wild Type Droid is the, I want to go ahead and say, fifth studio album from Los Angeles space rock band Failure. your favorite band and mine, Failure.
Give or take.
They are just, I mean, they're, you know, catch me on the right day, you know. They're an amazing band.
If I want to go to this particular thing, I'll go to this particular band.
Yes. So now, I say fifth. No, surely sixth.
Mm-hmm. Three old ones.
Three new ones. Yeah, sixth.
That's how it goes.
Sorry, sixth studio album.
Perfect even flush.
Yeah, and isn't that crazy? I suppose in 2021 it's not as rare as it used to be, but for a band to make a successful comeback and have that comeback last as long, if not longer, than their original run, it is still pretty rare. So you know, Comfort all the way back to 1992, followed by Magnified and Fantastic Planet, which I think was 1996. You know, a pretty, you know, Comfort people kind of go back and forth on, but a fairly flawless sort of initial run of albums, followed by was it a 15-year gap in the end?
They had the best of.
No, yeah, B-sides, but they had the what was that called? Golden?
Yeah.
There was very little activity. The band, there was no original new material until the Tree of Stars EP. So I think, 2015 was their comeback, and since then they had Heart as a Monster. Thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
In the future, your body will be the first thing from your mind. Two thumbs way, way up.
Yeah.
Here we are at Wild Type Droid. Yeah. Is it third time lucky? Third time's a charm?
Yeah, boy. Yeah, no diminishing quality whatsoever. No. Just changing it up a lot. Switching what you reference and stuff. Of course, when they started the comeback, they wanted to be a bit more fresh with it. Second one was a bit more new sounding stuff, like the furthest album, or the second last one that released, that was a bit more kind of new soundscapes that they haven't touched upon. And this third one is kind of fresh, but referencing the past.
Definitely, yeah. This is the first one. So I absolutely adore The Heart is a Monster. I mean, I love it, right?
That's my favorite of the three, possibly.
Okay, no. So that's actually my least favorite, but I still love it. But I think that has a couple of tracks on it that, to me, don't sound quintessentially failure, if that makes sense. They pushed the boat out, or they were kind of brushing the dust off a little bit, and maybe bringing in some of what they had been working on in the meantime, be that Ken Andrews' solo material and his production work, or Greg Edwards working on Autolux and his projects, and Kelly had done work for loads of people.
Yeah.
But you know, but then I think that's a great, great record. I think in the future was the where they kind of came and said
the
game,
they got back for real.
Got back for real. This is failure right here, right now. This is kind of a contemporary classic sound. Mm-hmm. And then I think what they're doing on Wall Type Droid, not to, you know, not to give the game away, but I think now they're comfortable enough in the new iteration of Failure, in the Failure 21st Century version, yeah, that they can say, right now we can start picking and choosing from our back catalogue.
Yeah, to finally those influences steep in. It in the vat.
Of, yeah.
The comfort vat, I'll call it.
Yeah. Because
this is definitely most referential to comfort.
Comfort, yep.
With dashes of the... it's also just as much as of a space rock album as the third one was.
Yeah, Fantastic Planet. Yeah, I agree.
And it definitely goes more on the rhythm edge, like the second album did. Mm. Like the bass definitely chugging along a lot.
Especially,
I think this is definitely rhythm, more rhythm based than they have ever been.
Yes,
I would say.
Yeah, definitely since Magnified. Which
you really get
go ahead.
You really get a good, perfect sense of where they're going with Water with Hands,
which is
just thundering bass, kind of a rumble to the drums, really complex, weird thing. Once again, I'm never sure if Kelly just decided to like record two drums together,
like I do sometimes.
Or just like, I don't know what his talents are, but it feels like he has four arms during some of those parts.
Kelly Scott. Yeah, it's such an interesting... Like, that song already just throws you for a loop, because it's... The bass has this wild sort of chorus flange effect on it. Mm-hmm. And then Kelly comes in with this sort of death disco groove. It's
what you usually expect with startup of a Failure album is big... Big distorted stuff. This ain't quite that.
No.
Because usually the guitar would lead that front. The guitar here is more... ethereal, stringy, kind of soaked in a wash of reverb. It kind of stays back a little bit.
Yes,
shines instead of distorts.
Twinkles.
The soundscape.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Water with Hands is like unusually jaunty kind of opening for Failure, but I think it really works. And then it
sets a pace. Like if you start walking with this, you'll walk at that pace. Right?
Yeah. And then not to do like track by track, but I just think I think that Water with Hands into Headstand is just such a great 1-2, and I think
because Headstand really brings back the doom,
core
of what Failure do best, space doom.
It's so that chorus is just so evil, and I know it's been too long.
It's got the crunchy bass to really it, but it's also got some positive notes, right? Yeah. It's still there. The guitar really lends to that. They can change it on a dime very quickly, and now we're right to a 1 minute song, so it's interesting to see where they place those 1 minute songs,
and a kind of a 1 minute song that's weird. Definitely the first, I think the first real kind of comfort throwback, A Lifetime of Joy, that has a little bit of almost comfort era, that sort of more avant-garde.
It's not bad, it's simple,
but also like a little bit of sort of Blind Melon, Pavement, 90s, you know, that's, I think it's really good. I think it's referring to Ken Andrews, probably his divorce. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I don't think that's private or anything like that. I think he did go through a pretty bitter divorce, and I think that's sort of, you can tell from the lyrics there's something around a lifetime of joy, and that's a bit of an ironic statement. But yeah, that song, there's not, so Lifetime of Joy is, I suppose, the segue song, but
well, this is when the emotions kind of change a bit, to what you'd expect, kind of, the P-word pandemic era Failure to be like. There is the sense of slight optimism in getting on with life. A lot of this is like, real, kind of bleak. Right? There's a real sense of kind of a bit of doom to this. Right?
It's certainly dooming.
At home doom instead of in space doom, right?
But then I kind of do feel like a lot of this is quite spacefaring. I mean, definitely the end of Headstand for sure.
Yeah,
is very kind of intergalactic. But
some of it sounds like down to home stuff, like submarines.
Yeah,
feels very old school.
Really
interesting bounce to that song.
So I mean, that sounds like Failure's version of a Rage Against the Machine riff, that bonk down, down, down,
except it's an octave pedal. Yeah,
it's wonderful. It's probably a guitar effect, but it sounds almost like they bring in brass at the end as well. Just the that last time, it's really amazing, and just the. It's like the chorus is just that submarines forever. It sounds like a giant monster crushing a city or something. It's so huge.
It's epic. It's a real epic chorus.
I think Submarines is amazing. I mean, there's a few I think that fall into that failure bangers. Mm. You know, that like big kind of riffy heavy songs.
And some of this also keeps the Beatlesque sense to it, like Bring Back the Sound for the first part. And Half Moon, right?
Half Moon is the Greg one.
I think Greg has a little love for that kind of stuff. Peniel Twilight Singers / Beatles.
Yeah, for sure. Because what was the one off? Peniel Electric was the one off In the Future, and then Greg had one that he sang on Heart as a Monster as well, which is kind of a new failure tradition. It's one that I really like.
I love it.
Yeah, because he's got a beautiful voice, and I think he can write those. I don't want to call it chamber pop, but very in that kind of. Widescreen 70s pop. I think he can write those songs.
I think
really
they have
well.
A good idea of how surprising his voice can be and where to use it sparingly.
Yeah.
I mean, they could use it so much, but I love that it's just the one song
that gets you at the end
and really makes you kind of reflect on what you just experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Half Moon is.
But most of this is doomy, and Half Moon is sad, but it's a little. It grows to be a little more hopeful.
Yeah.
I think
same
with stuff like Long Division as well.
Oh yeah,
quite a longing song, but it also feels a bit lost.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that's Long Division. I think is the real showcase for Kelly as well.
Yeah,
he just is
stuff he kind of grew to express in his EP recently. Not Kelly. Sorry, Ken.
Ken's EP. Sure.
But yeah, both of them grew with Long Distance. I think.
Yeah.
When it comes to vocal ability, when it comes to just making complex. The Cure like beats.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I love that one.
That's a really good one. That was actually the first one that I
stunning
went back to Kelly on.
One of the real positive kind of failure-esque songs.
I was like, Long Division is just it's so great. And you're right. You know that there is that major chord that on the
chorus.
You tell me who you are in
who
the chord.
You are.
Yeah, who you are, and
unexpected.
It just does that unexpected major, and that really lifts it. I think you're
because
right.
Usually, that would be at the end of the chorus,
yeah,
but it's in the middle of the phrase.
You are. It's really lovely, and but Failure, they do that. They kind of play with chords and they play with tonality in a really interesting way, and I kind of like that they can do that. I think I think it's a Headstand where they also really play with tonality because it changes. Mm-hmm. Key in some way at the end, but he sings the chorus in the original key, so there's a little clashes, but there's it kind of makes it sound more interesting.
Yeah,
a little scarier
it grows to like a looming presence of something in the background.
Yeah, on tentacles. Mercury Mount they do a whammy solo that reminded me of something that Alpha Male Tea Party would do, or you know, something like that. It's very, that's quite modern, I think. Mercury Mount is just it's just so fucking cool. You know what I mean? That's just, that song is just in the way that like Dark Speed was or something on the last record, or Hot Traveler. It's just the cool shades on kind of song.
They do a lot of that here.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, they know exactly what they're doing. I mean, that's a fantastic song.
It's a bop.
I mean, for me, the only
it's very typical Failure. But
yeah,
you know, it's nothing new for me.
No,
but I like it still. I don't love it. I like it.
I love Mercury Mouth. I think it's great. But yeah, of everything that's here, I think maybe, you know, I'm still kind of getting used to. I like Bring Back the Sound. I think it really gets going towards the end. To be fair, but you know, I think Bring Back
Two
the Sound and I think Bad Translation maybe is just a little bit kind of lumbering or you know, kind of slow. It sounds very like exhausted, you know, intentionally so. It's just that brown, brown.
But I know there's some serious typo negative kind of basing, right?
Deep
stuff.
But I hesitate to really critique too much.
I can a little bit.
You can. I have so much trust in this band.
On one hand, I could call this another space album. But on the other hand, I could call it just real comfort food. Classic. Like, they're really rooted into their classic sound, instead of kind of... What I prefer with Heart of the Monster is kind of being abrasive to the core of their sound and unflinching to not sounding quite like Failure. But you know, you're always going to sound like Failure. This is a member in the shoes, in the usual...
Yeah, I think this is them. I think this is them. Like,
no complaints on that.
Fine tuning, really. And you can't complain when the songs are so good. I think I really think they're like nearly every song on here is absolutely excellent. Like a fantastic example of when Failure do that thing. You know, I think probably on some right now as we stand here, I think I prefer it. I think I prefer it to Heart as a Monster. But I don't think I like it quite as much as in the future. Well, that could change.
I think, thinking back to it now, I'll listen to it over the next week or so. Yeah. But I think In the Future is my first, Heart is second, and this is third.
Okay.
I'm not diminishing in any quality at all. They're just different slices.
Yeah, they are.
Like, I can't.
Yeah.
Just can't, right? Yeah. Aspire to these.
It is so a little much. Bit shorter. It's a more compact journey, and the segues are built into the songs this time rather than being separate.
Yeah, I'd assume we would have got it out later if it wasn't, right?
I don't know. I don't know the release plan for. But I will say
it seemed like we got a little sooner than we got in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Was
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, it did. It did feel like pretty quick from when we were seeing like snippets of the studio to
Being released. It was a flash because all of a sudden it's like. We had In the Future, then pandemic happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Kelly had his health issues.
Yes,
then he got over his health issues.
Yeah.
Then an album's out.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
And also in between all that, Kelly was doing like what 200 drum recordings for. Work ethic is a weird. I'd love to see the time frame of how he filled this in.
Yeah, I don't
him
know.
Him in particular, because I know he did all so many different tracks.
I've
listened to a few of those tracks he did for different artists. They're great. They're great.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly Scott will drum.
I'll ask for you eventually, but from afar, it's good to see.
Yeah, you know, he's an amazing musician. I think it's a really good record.
Favorite bass so far. I think this is my favorite bass sound they've channeled so far.
Yeah,
they've just done something to it.
That's true. I mean, this is one to listen to. I just think Ken Andrews is, you know, one of the best producers on planet Earth, and this one is one to really.
And I'm glad the guitar is doing something a little different now.
Yep.
A little shinier.
Yeah. Yeah, the guitar. It's not a guitar album. It's very much a rhythm section album. The guitar is there in a supporting role, and it plays that role really well. Mm-hmm. But this is all about. You can just tell that Ken has got it down to a fine art how to produce and like stack and mix and place bass to make it sound absolutely colossal, and it just sounds great. The better the sound system you can listen to this on, the better. And honestly, they've just put up a Bandcamp for the first time. If you can get this on Lossless and just listen to it on a really good system.
And the other albums.
Actually, for the first time ever, I think, publicly available, the Fantastic Planet Live disc. So I bought that.
Yeah,
And if you and if you weren't lucky enough to get in on the Failure box, the sort of the retrospective box that has all the remixed and remastered albums, then you very much should go onto their Bandcamp and download them, because they are, I mean, in the case of Magnified and Comfort, for sure. I mean, Saturday Superhighs, Fantastic Planet was already pretty much perfect. It's got a slight remaster, but the remix on Comfort and Magnified is transformative, and especially Comfort, you need to go listen to those versions, not the ones that are on Spotify.
Yeah, to wrap this part up.
Yep.
Favorite song and all that jazz?
Right now it's Submarines.
Yeah, what a bounce. For me, it's absolutely Long Division.
Yeah, Long Division is great.
Yeah.
Long Division's excellent. I'm going to give this... what are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay.
Very good 8. I know that sounds weird for me, given... 10 out of 10 about an 8, but you know, in the span of things looking back, it'll probably grow.
Yeah,
I just need a bit more perspective to it.
Yeah, perspective is important. I'm gonna give it a 9.
Yeah,
I know. I know this band so well, and it's just so nice. I mean, what a treat to go from no failure on the horizon to brand new failure record that I know is incredible in 2 weeks. It was a very nice experience.
Oh, truly.
And yeah. this record doesn't disappoint. It's great. And a quick shout out, I can't remember the name, if I can pull it up, but this, I mean, you know, in the grand tradition of, I would say, you know, don't hate me, but in the tradition of accept the heart as a monster, I don't like the graphic design, I don't like the cover design, actually I don't like the design of that album at all, but everything else the Failure Done, I think, has been exceptionally well designed, and this is no exception. I actually think this might be, apart from maybe Fantastic Planet, this might be my favorite Failure album cover. I just think it is so
definitely
cool.
A thesis on what they are as a band.
Yeah,
like a group, like the last remnants of Earth walking into a spacesuit.
It's like Pikmin meets Junji Ito. It is.
Yeah, there's a fear that
so cool
exists, but I don't know the name of it, and that's this album cover.
Yeah. The album cover, you got to see it, by somebody called Beeple. So shout out Beeple. Amazing work on the album cover for this album. It really helps, I think, to have great
nice
great
going, guys.
Great stuff. All right, that's Wild Type Droid by Failure. Dylan, I'll give you Dito's choice on the next record.
Yeah, we're doing Man with the Mission.
All right, Man with the Mission.
So this is kind of my fave, right?
Yes, it is.
Somewhat.
It's definitely your fave. Man with the Mission from Tokyo, Japan. Shibuya specifically.
Shibuya,
shout out. This is the second Man with the Mission record we've covered on the show.
It's been quite a bit since the last one, actually. Three and a half years, technically.
I think every single album we're covering, except for Portico Quartet, sorry. 4 out of 5 records we're reviewing on the show are follow-ups to 2018 albums.
Yeah, a bit of a jump to this, because most noticeably, and with these guys as well, they've had the time to release this finally. It was, I say it was going to be out last year.
Right.
Judging by the trajectory of the singles.
Right.
And a lot of bands of this ilk that kind of have the delay. You see the singles trickling out a little longer.
Okay.
Billy Talent as well did that. And there's his next February.
Okay.
But that's why they've had so much time to do this.
Right.
And this is part one of the album is called, what is it?
Break and Cross the Walls.
Break and Cross the Walls.
One.
Yeah, sort of good English.
Sort of.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, could translate that to something accurate. But yeah, part two will be out in February or March.
Okay.
So they've had enough time to expand on their original thesis, given time. And yeah, so right now I've, like, where I'm at is at a difficult moment where I've heard half of the album already, and then the other half was released just recently with this. So it was an interesting experience for me to get all of it, or you to get all of it pretty much in one go.
Yeah,
I think you heard one or two songs coming through. But they've been out for a while, some of these. For me.
I had a look at the Wikipedia. It looks like I have written quite a few times, this sounds like an anime opening, and according to Wikipedia, quite a few of them have been.
Yeah, they've got a good break with some of this stuff, right? What was there? The Into the Deep actually was in the Godzilla soundtrack.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, so that was a big thing for them.
Okay.
But anyway, off all those references to anime, what can you recall your impressions of the last album to this one?
Probably, I actually tried to find. I was having a trouble accessing the show, so I'm hoping that this isn't a too widespread of a problem. But the hosting service that we use for the show seems to be down. I actually wanted to listen back to my thoughts on the last one, but I couldn't. So I'm really hoping that it's live again and that we don't have any issues putting this episode up. But listen, Dylan. Like, being brutally honest, I'm sure I thought it was probably fine.
Yeah, I think you're fine about it.
For a fact, I'm definitely not a fan. I know for a fact that Another Dead End in Tokyo I thought was a banger. I think this is the kind of band where I probably get about 1 to 2 songs per album that I think are good, and definitely Another Dead End in Tokyo, which I think was a Patrick Stump collab, if I'm not very much mistaken.
Yeah, he did some of the lyrics and vocals.
And helped kind of write it, yeah.
Yeah.
I or at least collaborated on it.
Yeah.
That's a great song, and actually that entered my regular rotation. I think that's a really, really good song, and we do get another Stump collab.
It kind of jumps off them.
We get another Stump collab on this. I think is one of the better tracks, the 86 Missed Calls.
86 Missed Calls is a nice kind of slow mid-tempo stomp to that.
Yeah, it's a stomper, which wouldn't be that kind of like greaser, like rock and roll stuff, wouldn't be my usual thing, but
it is very. What's that album? Folia It's the
Folia de,
yeah. It's the Fall Out Boy one that's a bit more heavier than usual.
I was gonna say it has that little, it has kind of a more modern
I Don't Care kind of stomp to it.
Oh yeah, good show.
It's a roaring one. And
I mean, you know, it wouldn't matter if Patrick Stump's vocals weren't on that track. I mean, no other, the way he sings the woes, or the way he writes the
best part of that, Man With a Mission kind of do that as well, and I think Man With a Mission kind of started as they're fans of Fall Out Boy in a way as well.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah, yeah. I think
they started in 2010. So they came off that.
They wear wolf masks, by the way. That's kind of their kitsch.
A weird backstory to them, but anyway, we'll get off that. This is a fun one. This starts off pretty high speed, right?
Yeah, kind of in that. You okay? I mean, there's sort of a there's a lot of songs on the album that fall into that kind of. Sort of would be 30 Seconds to Mars, like very emotionally charged, sort of anthemic stadium rock.
Yeah, yeah. And the drums are very lightning fast, kind of.
Sure.
They trigger pretty fast on the speedy hi hat magic and.
Yep.
Yeah, very emotionally thoughtful stuff.
Yeah.
Has a nice little mid break.
It kind of tries to throw in some trap.
Maybe not trap, but.
It's got the cicada hi hats and stuff. They do. See, I think I always say they have the sort of a DJ kind of, in the band. So there's quite a bit of like throughout the record. There's a lot of random scratching and kind of
that's the kind of sound they do
to check it out, sort of stuff. Yeah,
they're a bit of a skater boy band for real.
Yeah.
I believe Evergreen, another song, kind of at that speed, right? It's the second last song. That is a guy skating in the music.
That's
video,
kind of so a bit. It's skatery, but it's almost a bit too. It's almost a bit too posy for me. I think it kind of reminds you of a similar thing to the Andrew WK record.
Yeah, it is a real positive kind of thing. This energy.
Yeah. There's a lot of kind of major key, kind of inspirational type. I mean, there's one track that reminded me of what you might see over some drone footage of the rainforest towards the end.
Is it Remember Me?
That one's
okay. It has some nice wah stuff.
I really
like some of the guitarings in this. They get into that Tom Morello feel.
A lot
of solos kind of do that. That's a new thing that wasn't on the last album. The solos are a bit more wilder and more creative in this one.
Right.
Some of them are incredible, to be honest. Change the World. I think that could be my favorite song off the bat.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's... All right, let's talk about Change the World for a second, because... That's a great song. Change the World is a great song.
Great kind of lead up.
It's got
charge to it.
Great pace, great energy. It reminds me of a little bit of Boston Manor. I'm trying to think, like when Boston I say,
Manor. Oh yeah, yeah, no.
30 Seconds to Mars. I'm kind of going when I say good when I say Boston Manor. I'm saying, I think they're good. You know, so it,
somewhere
it's
in between
song.
Is a great thing with those bands, and this is seems to be that.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a great great nice. Chorus.
Great vocals in that as well.
Yep.
I think he really hits peak. He literally hits peak octave range at the end. Kind of the end just before the solo. he really projects, and it's fucking great.
This is actually a solo. Weirdly, a lot better. It's just that solo kind of shines a bit more than a lot of the other ones. Like sometimes the guitar feels very... overall, it's super, super processed. So sometimes the guitar feels quite squeezed. Whereas on that song, it gets a bit more room
to
breathe.
Some of them are probably in little different recording sessions, is my
thought. But listen, Change the World, I think overall is great. I love those. I love the energy of the snare pulse as well.
What I thought I wouldn't really like, I actually really enjoyed, which is the Thunderstruck cover.
I actually enjoyed a lot of the music.
Not so much the lyric or the vocal approach at the start, because it's a bit spoken wordy. But as it grew, I was like, okay, some of this is really well put together and different, not a copy and paste. More so, just their own vibe to the song.
I can agree with that,
and just kind of the feel of the mix and the master and the way they record things with other stuff translates well to the kind of the chorus as it comes in. It's a little different, and he sounds a bit like Ozzy Osbourne at parts, which is weird. The main guy, the main singer guy, there's the other guy as well. I didn't hate that as much as I thought I would.
It's pretty bad, I gotta be honest. I just couldn't believe what I heard. I don't think rapping the verse to Thunderstruck.
I mean, he kind of does it as well. It's the same. He's metering out the same as the singing, or the rasp singing is in the original.
I didn't think you were going to come in and defend that one, but fair enough. You know, it is what it is. Yeah. I think that...
Well, it's a song that I don't really like much either way.
Oh, I do. I like Thunder. I think Thunderstruck's a great song. I think it's a great song.
But I think the chorus to this, it's pretty well to that. And it keeps kind of in character to them.
Because, I'm not going to...
We don't need to dwell on...
Beat a dead horse, but I think having that as the second song, it's a very processed, artificial sounding cover.
The logic is weird.
It's It sends to the grid.
It does have a pound to it, but yeah, you know, just
listen. You know, fair enough. Agree to disagree, but I have to say
it's a bit clubbish, and that's what clubbish kind of songs do.
Yeah, you're not going to find me. Look, you know,
different vibe. I'll give you
go off.
I'll give them credit there.
Go off, but I have to say, Thunderstruck, and I mean in particular, I'm not gonna try and bring a lot of negative energy into this, but I have to say, I think
trust me, I'm trying to keep positive. About
I appreciate your positivity. I gotta say, I think Subliminal is one of the worst songs I've heard all year. Song? It is
which song is the one where he's talking about.
Oh yeah, it's so cheesy and greasy and lazy and crazy. 1, 2, 3, 4, get on the back and ask for more. Yeah. I mean, I was like, no, I can't do this, man. I can't do this.
Yeah, no, I don't like.
I don't like most of that song,
yeah. But I like a good bit of the guitar in it.
Okay.
And I like where it goes later on. I think it develops better as it gets to the end point.
Okay.
I think that part, the verse part you phrased, ain't great. but
that's funny too. The 1, 2, 3, 4 is the previous track. They're actually two tracks in a row.
Into the Deep is actually pretty good.
The 1, 2, 3, 4. Put up your hands and ask for more.
Just deal with it.
I can't
deal with it.
Those two tracks, I just can't. The lyrics, when they sing in Japanese, it's fine, but some of the English lyrics are so clunky. Oh my goodness!
I got past that. I can enjoy it, and quite frankly, Into the Deep is more in the club.
Chorus is cool.
It's more in the club phrase of the bop. I like the second. I like the way the second verse kind of rhythmically, the lead guitar and the rhythm kind of join together, and it really gets kind of fun.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's fun. Merry-go-round is good, kind of. It's fun, you know. I like how the chorus works in that one.
Yeah, I will say
to be kind of graceful and kind of jaunt. It's just a jaunt to it.
Yeah, it's got this kind of.
It's interesting.
It's got a, what was that album called? The one that we liked, Paradise. No, that was the song off it, but. Whatever the Fox Capture Plan album was that we both really liked, it's got a little bit of that kind of strings underneath the chorus, and then strings come in with that sort of
good string work.
Dream Theater.
That's something they've developed in the last two albums. It was great backing string work, and I think they lead it up here pretty well whenever it appears.
The second time it comes around at the end of the song, I think in Merry-Go-Round is very good. I like that a lot. I think that's very good.
Breaking Across the Walls. It's a positive, uplifting one. I like that one.
That's the one that sounds like music over drone footage of the Amazon. To me, it's very like
and that's a fun one. That makes me feel good. A lot of this does. This band makes as the, you know, I'm not a fan of radio bands. This is probably my favorite radio band.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing them live. They fucking pump it live really well.
If they did more stuff like Change the World, I'd be on board. They just do a lot of stuff that's either kind of slightly ill-advised sort of hip-hop inspired stuff, or they do stuff that's very emotionally like sincere and earnest and quite overwrought, kind of like anthemic ballad type songs. I can see the points.
I can pierce the points that kind of get to you. I know those.
Yeah,
points.
And you know, but it's
I'm all right about some. You know, some to be frank.
Yeah.
I'm not too on board with the real soapy, less heavy parts of their career, because they have some kind of the ballady, lighter elements in their career.
Like that last track, Anonymous. I mean, it's a bit of a sleeper, isn't it? It's very like four chords.
It's not
just
bad.
You know, kind of.
It's not great, and I'm happy it's like. Then the second album's coming out, and that'll be the second part. And you won't know what's on that. Hopefully, it's 9 tracks, 10 tracks. I haven't heard. It probably will be the case.
Listen, you know, it is what it is. I'll bring in stuff sometimes, and I'll kind of know. I think you probably kind of know. You at this point, we've been doing this so long, you know, we've been doing this for 4 years now and change. You kind of know sometimes the stuff that's not going to vibe with me. Mm. It's fine, you know, it's fine, and I appreciate it for what it is. And there's some songs on here that I think are pretty good, but for the most part, it's just not my bag.
Yeah, no, well, I'm here to show you how much it is for me.
So
in
yeah,
my bag.
So
every time Man with a Mission hit,
yeah,
I'm in a real shit part of my life, yeah, and I need them to get through, and they appear.
So what is it about them that hits for you? And like, let's be positive. I'm going to give you the floor for a minute, mm-hmm, and let you just talk to me about all the things you like about this record.
I love the drive to it.
Okay.
The optimism, kind of heavy digitized kind of groove that, mm-hmm, I guess bands like, oh, what would be a shit version of this? Hollywood Undead would be a shit version of this, okay, band. Sorry, Hollywood, but I kind of,
I still don't know Hollywood Undead too well, so
yeah. You know, I like some of the kind of the scratching stuff as well. That kind of take a little bit from Linkin Park, bits of Fall Out Boy, bits of heavy guitar stuff.
Yep.
Give it a bit more of a Japanese edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
They can be pretty wild, pretty weird, pretty cheesy, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I just like the unbridled optimism to some of their stuff, and the feel. There's a feel good punch to a lot of the stuff that gets me up well in the morning.
Maybe the same three reasons I enjoyed the Band Aid Brigade album last year, even though that was quite cheesy at parts.
Same thesis to that. And yeah, so last time I listened to this band, I didn't have a job and I just got a job.
Yep.
I was like late at tail end 2018.
Yep.
The start of me getting employed, right, properly. And this time is like, oh, something get me through the end of, or route, or fucking route four of this pandemic.
Right, right.
these guys come along again. It's like, yes, I need that pick me up.
Good.
So it's a good pick me up band. And yeah, I, you know, they have fucking fantastic stuff from their early days that you haven't heard that would probably enjoy if you enjoy Change the World and stuff like that.
I do really enjoy that song.
It's not their heaviest album. I think you'd like their heaviest stuff more, to be honest.
But they do. Yeah. It's funny. It does seem to be something you really don't hear as much in Western music. Where
great arena band.
Yeah, where they
you
will
can probably hear, tell.
Throw in those sort of big riffs every now and again, and it displays a, you know,
they got me more pumped than Foo Fighters did on the same day Foo Fighters was on.
Yeah.
Right. So that just goes to show where they are in my kind of placement of bands I used to like. And
yeah, I mean, Foo Fighters have taken their foot off the pedal for sure. I think I from memory, and I did want to go back and have a listen, but I didn't get a chance. But from memory, is this as strong as the last one? I think I remember the last one being a little bit stronger. Just overall. Even as a fan or a non-fan, but I think I remember
I think I like the last one a bit more.
A little bit more, yeah.
But this one, some of the peaks are higher.
Yeah, okay.
Change the World, for instance.
Yeah.
Change the World, Into the Deep, 86 Missed Calls, Evergreen to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of them. Even, what's the one? Klaxon... the one in
here, Hornmark or Klaxon,
Klaxon Mark, Klaxon Mark. I'm not. That's a siren or something, I guess. But
yeah, sure.
And that's a fun one. That's kind of a surf rock Tony Hawk's Pro Skater thing. It's weird, but it fits in the style of music they do. That's fun.
I was gonna say it sounds like the theme song to a '90s sitcom that was set in space. That was some sort of like '90s version of the Jetsons.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's not the best, but it's fun.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
But the fact that this is only the first half of it is, you know, I might call back later on the second one and see if it's worth it.
If it's coming out in February or March, I suppose maybe this is the one where they kind of dump all of the anime songs and the singles, the next one they'll be.
I think that's the stuff that already happened.
But it's on this, right?
What do you mean? Like the
like there's a good selection of this stuff that you've already heard.
Yeah, like so six songs.
So maybe on the next one it'll be kind of all fresh and it might have a bit more.
I hope so.
Of a, you know, it might have a consistent vibe or whatever. I don't know. I think that eclecticism is part of their shtick. So, you know, I'm sure it won't be, you know, one feel throughout the record or anything like that. Yeah. But at least it'll be a suite of songs that you're not already familiar with.
I hope so. One more thing I really like is just the back and forth between Tanaka, the main singer, and the guitarist.
Gene Ken kind of Johnny,
I like the back and forth with them and the occasional harmonies that are very... Yeah. They've got very distinct voices from each other, so that's a positive.
I think I definitely prefer Tokyo Tanaka.
The main guy with the deeper voice?
The main guy, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think Jigen is the guy who sounds a little bit more like the guy from Eiffel 65.
Yeah.
It's a bit more... he's got a kind of a more like nasally type voice. But yeah, they're fun, both fine.
Fun together, and that gives this band a lot of character. Like them or love them or...
Yeah, sure.
You know, yeah. And hopefully they play abroad. Abroad, that would be lovely someday.
Have you seen that before?
Yeah,
Summer Sonic,
yeah, same day. So that was good fun. So you
were you into them, or is that how you got into them, or were you into them at that point?
I was curious. I was on the cusp of getting into them.
Okay,
and I was like, oh fuck, I'm getting into them. Right,
they must have been sweating in those masks, huh? If it was
no, they
it was
have warm. They have good ventilation
systems
with big helmets, right? Jesus. You should know you did a bit of a
that was a no ventilation foxy. Systems they yeah. were that was a gross
that was pure latex
experience something. yeah oh my god, no, I'd never again. I wouldn't do it on the reg, let me tell you. And the wolf mask,
they have a lead guitarist, they have another touring guitarist as well that just, you know, he's an ordinary guy,
just
he's,
an ordinary
he's like Tortilla Man from Slipknot, kind of just anonymous
Tortilla
mask wearing dude with a hoodie.
Oh my god.
But yeah, unofficial wolf, whatever,
that's really funny. Puppy. What's your? I mean, I feel like we both
give me your stuff.
Same favorite song. I mean, it's changed the world. I think I genuinely think that's a really good song. It's a good song. I really, really like that. Genuinely, good. I'll keep
good,
that one.
Good to hear.
Keep that one in the rotation.
Keep a couple of these actually.
And what about yourself?
Well, you chose that.
I did.
So I'm gonna go with 86 Makes Calls.
Oh, because
holy shit, it's great to hear Pat Stump in a rock song. You know, whenever it happens, it's great to hear him come back and he gels. If he was just a member of Man With A Mission from here on out, I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Like
they
have the right
mind. No, they work well together. So I would listen to a full collab album. There's a line in it that I was like, they didn't write that. Somebody else wrote that. Which is the line, it's like, we got too drunk swinging from the ceiling. We're living life hard. Yeah, living life hard because dying's too easy. Yeah. I was like, that's too good to be written. You know what I mean? Like that,
yeah,
that's
it's a very good English.
That's a stump line. It's kind of it's got a good kind of twinkle in the eye.
The meter is right in English.
Yeah, the meter is right in English. Dead right. But yeah, that's a stump line. I like
getting
that
better with their English stuff.
Oh yeah,
like,
no, it's fine.
Like mad props to like breaking that boundary of like starting with half English, half Japanese, even though you're not good, and then just keep going with it.
There's something happening in Telescope that I'm sort of makes me uncomfortable, so I don't want to read the lyrics. Something about like looking into your room through a telescope. I'm like,
that's a fun one as well.
Like, get off it. I just hope that's just a bad translation. But listen, anyway, that's fine. What's your score out of 10?
I would give this probably an 8. Yeah, a really good 8.
Alright.
So, and the last one was like a 9 to a 10. So,
yeah.
And I think like the first few albums were like 10s. So, I'd probably send you a good playlist of like songs I think you would like. But, you know, I'll have one.
An EP's worth of the best I will listen to.
Yeah, there's some solid ones you'll be like, holy shit, this band is worth
I will give it. I'll always give 4 or 5 track playlists a good rinsing.
So, yeah, glad this wasn't a total disaster for you.
No, I was. Listen, you know, I, as I say, if I can, a couple of tracks I really like, a few that just did nothing for me, a few that I didn't think were great. It's probably a 5. For me, but that's you know how this goes.
That's a bit shit.
How many times we've been, dude? I can't. Some of the songs I really think the Thunderstruck cover is. Anyway, but I won't go there.
Yeah,
but,
sequencing a bit weird, but hey.
No, it's not for me. You know, we've been down this road before so many times. It's just not for me, but that's okay. So the album is called, what is it called? Breaking Across the Walls One by Man With The Mission. Again, another one of those Are You Dylan or Are You Dylan moments. Time to find out. Go check it out and see what you think. Alright, third album of the week comes from Lindsay Jordan, otherwise known as Snail Mail.
Yes.
So Lindsay Jordan came to prominence very early in life. She was only, I think, just turned 18 when her last album Lush came out in 2018, like all the other albums that precede this week's albums. Really great, just as far as one of those pure distilled, no kind of fuss, no bells and whistles, just, you know, well written songs indebted to the 90s and like indie, that kind of like 90s indie sound. That was Snail Mail Lush, right? And I actually kind of thought Snail Mail had just gone away forever. I thought that it would just be that one album, and it would always be a cool album when you were listening to, you know, Beach Bunny or Charlie Bliss or Beba Doobie or, you know, Soccer Mommy or Waxahachie. You would just throw on Lush by Snail Mail. But here we are, kind of out of nowhere. I'm sure there was a big press release for this, but as far as I was concerned, I was like, oh my god, Snail Mail's back, great. And then I stuck it on and sort of thought, oh, Snail Mail's changed. The game done changed.
It's totally tackling a different aspect of what
different aspect.
She didn't really tackle in the first one,
No. This has much more to do with poppy. 70s and 80s, I think.
It's a bit more of that pop era.
Yeah, and she worked with Brad Cook on this, who has worked with Bon Iver, The War on Drugs, The Staves, Waxahachie. So this is a much more of a Lush cinematic pop sound, I think. Maybe like a little bit Tame Impala, a little bit of Fleetwood Mac. You know, that sort of AOR sound, like, you know, like an adult contemporary type sound. But I have to say, you know, at the start I was a little bit, my first few listens through I was a bit kind of, is this passing me by a little bit? But the more time you spend
it was as instantaneous as almost anything has been this year in this spectrum of music.
Not instantaneous for me, but let me tell you, I got there.
Well, like, I automatically latched onto the real creativity with this, with Valentine off the bat.
It's a great opener.
Like, great use of dynamics, the soft to loud, with the chorus and verse just exploding and then just jingling. Right?
Yeah.
It's real kind of soothing and then big.
There's a real
huge drums.
Yeah.
All the way through, really. Even during the quiet stuff, it was loud, like mastered to loud drums. Like,
it has a real feel of
loud room.
Like, woman who is ready to just like conquer the world, like Stevie Nicks style, you know, that kind of way. It just feels like you're not going to take any shit from anybody on that track. I love that. And it's such a great lyric that, you know, whatever, I can't remember exactly what the lyric is, but it's something like, you know, you meant the world to me, so why do you want to erase me, my sweet Valentine? And she's really going for it in that chorus, and it's great. Yeah. I think it's a great, great opener. Yes,
very love learn kind of stuff, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole album is, I was reading an interview, I think, because like Lindsay, she's gay, she doesn't, you know, she talks about that a lot, but there's some sort of general genre trope apparently called gay yearning. I think another good example would be maybe Girl in Red, but there are a lot of sort of like albums from like queer women that have a great theme of you know, looking for that one great love that might be unattainable.
Yeah, something, you know, it can be a little harder.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially during these days.
And especially when you're, like, all of these artists typically tend to be under 25.
You're very young, you have to go, I'd assume, like, stop college, kind of, and go back to live with your parents during the pandemic stuff, and you're away from potential soulmates and whatever. You gotta kind of waste a bit of that stuff to live with your own mind.
But she sort of said, it's A, that's derivative, but B, also, that's actually pretty accurate. So that was interesting. Yeah. She was like, I don't want to be labeled as a sad girl, but I am a very sad girl. It's like,
that's what you make out of that sad girlness, right?
Yeah. I was like, actually, fair play. That's interesting. But no, I think it's a really interesting, and who else? I think there's a, lyrically, not so much musically, but I think lyrically there's a lot in common with Blox as well. Who has a similar kind of lyrical themes, and I just think there's something,
bit of Soda Blonde too.
Yep, a bit of Soda Blonde to it also. I think I love that. I think that really works, and it brings such an interesting and unique take to the feeling behind these songs. Yeah. And she's such an expressive vocalist as
well. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of more rock orientated Billie Eilish kind.
Like, she tells the story of the songs in a way that, me as not a lyrics person, I actually tune into every song from the emotional perspective because of how she's singing. And she's putting so much of herself into the performance, which is great.
Yeah, especially Ben Franklin as well.
Oh, Ben Franklin is just...
Rest of the troupe as well. Great musicians. I don't know what's the soundboard like for this?
There is a band. I don't know if they're just live. I know she spoke about... you know, she's obviously... She's a guitarist herself. And I think... I don't quite know. I'd imagine definitely session drummer. I wouldn't be surprised if it was session drummer plus Lindsay. But...
Some real interesting bass tones going on in Ben Franklin, kind of warbly driving stuff.
Big, very brash and bossy and not what you expect at all, I think, from knowing Lush. I mean, that's that song has such a groove to it. It's really good. And you know what it reminds me of, actually, especially the Do you remember the song AZ by Now Now? Welcome to the summer, we all went out to Arizona. Very similar. Every time I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, it reminds me of that song. But it's a brilliant song, and it's one of the best tracks on the album. Ben Franklin is so good.
Yeah, next one starts a bit kind of headlock, goes for a bit more of a what would you
say, like Anna Birch or Anna War on Drugs or something.
Yeah, a bit more light.
It's light.
Middle West emo kind of.
That kind of Midwest longing. But there's like a descending pattern that she uses. That's really nice. Breaks my heart every time. I just think it's so good. So she kind of, there's sort of a little bit of a, I don't want to say a saggy middle, but there's a couple of tracks.
Yeah, I think it picks back up with that, River Sailing.
But then
Forever Sailing's
a good one.
Oh, Forever
Sailing's great.
We're both on that, right?
Yeah. No, Forever Sailing's great. And the Forever Sailing is where we're back into 90s land, but it's more it's more like trip hop 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Forever Sailing a bit more early garbagey to Smashing Pumpkins.
I was going to say All Saints. I think it sounds like All Saints. It sounds like sort of trip hop filtered through 90s pop. It's really good. Yeah, it's really good.
You kind of get the bit more where like Automate and
Automate is great.
Madonna kind of go with the what's the band? No Doubt.
Oh, sure.
It kind of the more quiet, subdued era No Doubt songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ballady ones, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few more of the more kind of ballady ones. See It All, I think, is probably maybe the least successful of them all. It's a cool song, and I feel like she's singing so close to the mic, you can almost hear her like actual vocal cords vibrating.
Yeah.
But I think the real triumph, when the song started, I thought, is this another Sea at all? Mia, the last track, is incredible. I just think it's absolutely amazing.
Stunning end to it.
It's a bit like that, you know, that Joywave album that ended with a like almost like a John Legend piano ballad. I mean, it feels like that. It feels like such a classy. It's closing classic. Credits song. It's like, I think maybe it's a little Joni Mitchell. Like it's something about it is so singular.
Yeah,
and it's got the lounge piano, the sweeping strings. Just feels like a big 70s, big band in a room type song.
Yeah, it is very super cinematic, theatrically charged.
There was even theatrical, not even cinematic, but theatrical.
Yeah,
absolutely. You actually kind of suggested we bring this in. It was on my radar, and I'm so glad that you.
It was on my radar too, but I was like, "Oh fuck, it's out now."
Yeah,
so that was my thought.
No, I had already listened to it, but I think I had it on in maybe the wrong context because this is an album that really just has so much to offer to you. I think.
Yeah, it's what I wanted from Bebe Dewey.
Oh,
but I didn't get.
I
got a bit more with this, maybe in some ways.
I wouldn't even think of them as being. I mean, I understand they're kind of, you put them on the same bill, but they're so different. Maybe Snail Mail's first record, but this just feels very different.
Yes,
very very different.
A bit more in my lane, I think.
Yeah, this doesn't
stay too 90s. It keeps going.
It doesn't know.
Whereas for me, I don't want to compare and downtrod on other bands, but I think that stays a little back in the 90s too. You know, they're still figuring out that sound. They have to move on to what this happens to be going forward too, which I think is a good end point, or not end point, just another stone to hop on.
Yeah,
right. I think a lot of these bands are yet to get to this point, and it's great to see.
Yeah,
great to see this band get to that point.
Yeah, I think definitely she's Bebe Dewey is more like a theme act. I want to say, like, in that Bebe Dewey's thing is that she sounds like a really amazing 90s time capsule, whereas I think Snail Mail, particularly on this album, has said, nah, fuck that, I'm gonna write songs and I'm gonna use the arrangements and instrumentation that suit those particular songs. And
there's hints of decades past. It's not quite steeped in it, so
that's the thing. This doesn't feel to me, it might have nods to the past, but this doesn't feel like a time capsule type album. It feels very 2021 to me. Particularly because that kind of that voice is so vital, and it's so great that we're getting so many artists that are breaking into the mainstream who have a different perspective than maybe just your sort of AN other sort of normal, your AN other kind of mainstream, main lane, kind of just the normal experience that we're all kind of used to hearing about for the last 60 years in popular music.
Stuff is brutally honest.
Like,
I have a sense that, she sings from the heart, truly.
Yeah.
Without just, just adhering to popular typicalness. Like, it's not, it's no one else's thoughts but hers, and it's truly out there, honestly.
And I think between Snowmail and Girl in Red, those are just two really vital voices.
Like, there's some shit here. I'm like, should I have heard that?
Should I have
heard that part of your mind come out in lyrics?
I know.
It's hard stuff, but incredible stuff.
It's really, really good. It's really, really good. I like this a lot. It's just a really good pop album too. It's not just, a sort of a treatise on the what it is to be like a young person in 2021. It's also just very, very well written pop music.
Some, as I'll call now, Soda Blonde grade bops.
I prefer Soda Blonde, but that's just, I have such a,
yeah.
I feel like I have a deep, almost sort of ancestral connection or something to the music of Soda Blonde. But
it's good to see someone else hit that kind of quality measure.
We've only had it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it's very different. We've had Soda Blonde for a long, long time. But yeah, I think, it's so hard. It's so hard to pick a favorite on this record.
Is it though? There's a lot of good stuff.
I think Glory is probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah. That's a great
one. It's gorgeous, gorgeous song.
Mine's definitely Ben Franklin.
Yeah,
Ben Franklin. I just love the bass. I'm real, real sucker for that kind of bass sound.
Yeah, it's good. It's really, really good. It's probably an 8 from me.
Yeah, I'm giving everything an 8. totally different genre.
Eight is great. Yeah, it is funny to think of
truly deserving eights.
The three records we talked about all being the same score, but yeah, it's an 8. It's eights and eights are great. So that's Valentine by Snail Mail.
Moving on.
Moving right along.
Will I go for one? Or do you want to go for one?
I want to go for one.
Go for one.
Why don't we do Portico Quartet? Monument. I'm going to go ahead and say 9th album from...
Second one this year. Depending on what you're looking for
album. I count the one this year. So I was looking... They seem to count... The first live album, which I wouldn't count, but then they don't count Art in the Age of Automation 2, which it's not. No, it's just like it's a collection of live tracks. But they don't officially count Art in the Age of Automation 2, which is insane because it's their best album.
Not at all.
Okay, well, listen. No matter
it's a weird thing with Portico Quartet, and they're kind of a different band than what they were. The self-titled Portico Quartet.
Yes.
Had Nick Mulvey in it.
No. Originally. I think he was gone by then. Wasn't he?
That was his last one.
Oh,
right?
Was that his last one? He was on Knee Deep in the North Sea for sure.
Yeah, sorry, Knee Deep in the North Sea. That was it.
Yeah.
And that.
He was the dedicated. Oh, is it? Okay, here's the thing, right? Portico Quartet.
I'd have to go back, actually. Maybe
you introduced me to this band, right? You introduced me to Portico Quartet with Art in the Age of Automation. So that was the first thing that I heard from them. And then we've covered Art in the Age of Automation 2, which I thought was absolutely incredible. Memory Streams, which I think you and I both agree was a bit of a disappointment, right? It was fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, like, pretty okay.
Yeah, it was grand.
It was grand. And then we didn't cover Terrain earlier on this year because I think it was just a crazy time and it seemed to have come... It's sort of more of a suite. It's like four really long tracks. Three really long tracks. And I think we just kind of skipped over it and I haven't honestly really given it much time.
It touches on some really cool stuff, though.
Right. So I never went back to Knee Deep in the North Sea until I was preparing for this review because if you look at the stats on Spotify, you think they never released any other albums. It's just so far and away ahead in terms of plays, because this guy Nick Mulvey was playing the Hang, I think, on that record live. Like, he was playing it. I think it's pretty good, but honestly, I think it's kind of a bit too jaunty and happy clappy. It's good, But I actually much prefer the darker, sort of broodier, more somber, electronic-inspired Portico Quartet that's been around for the last sort of 5 or 6 years, honestly.
From that to self-titled, I love that stretch as well. But, you know, I've loved seeing them change and grow.
And they really have. And they're they're a really eclectic, not eclectic, prolific band.
Mm.
They release albums very consistently, and you always can see a progression and a real love of the craft. And for a band...
Yeah, this is a different set of instruments to kind of work with and stay with. And they break off that a little bit and have fun.
What's their... I mean, you know, we haven't really spoken about genre, but what's... You know, if you were to describe the music of Portico Quartet...
How do you describe Radiohead, really?
Oh, right. Interesting. Do you think there's a Radiohead connection?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I can
hear it. Oh, yeah. Have you heard... Did you hear AOE?
I did hear AOE.
It totally has that kind of low sub... What era of Radiohead? The last two albums of Radiohead. They had some deep stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like sub-bass kind of...
That kind of reminded me of what the Streets were drawing on. That sort of... the hangover after the rave sort of thing on AOE, but I think what Portico Quartet do is it's sort of somewhere between a kind of a jazz fusion and electronica and avant-garde instrumental. It's somewhere in the mix. They're definitely a jazz band, but they're also an ambient electronic act.
Yeah, they stick a bit more in the pop alt route.
Yeah,
melodically,
yeah.
They don't. There's not a lot of like wild flourishes of batshit insane.
But and yet they're a band that has, they have a jazz quartet setup. They have a keyboard player, a drummer, a saxophonist, and a bass player. I mean, that's the jazz, sort of the jazz quartet, Michael Woolney trio, another trio, but or like Go-Go Penguin.
Yeah, they still keep bits of marimba. They still,
and this, I think it's a hang.
Hang is a hang. Sorry, yes.
But they might do marimba also. But
water drums, whatever, you know,
whatever it is, that kind of steel drum sound. Yeah,
yeah, that's like candy to me, dude.
I love it.
I am. Next time I have some expendable income, that's one of the things that might come into my possession. This is so expressive. But yeah, this one introduces some different stuff, like some guitars, some bits of guitars.
Oh, right? Did you hear guitar?
I think so. Oh, right. Nice. Is it, some of the first songs have like a higher register instrument, kind of like a guitar doing a bit of solo work or some stuff?
I'll allow it. I mean, yeah, I didn't pick it out. I picked out way more piano than usual on this record, which I think was just gorgeous. I mean, I always talk about the rolling 90s house piano, and I think there's a fair bit of that on it's one of the tracks, Ever Present has that, and it's so good. It sounds like one of those nostalgic piano lines, those loops, but coming through a interdimensional portal somehow and getting sort of warped and twisted along the way. It's really good. You know, it's hard to pick out individual.
Like, it's so weird because some of this is very prog as well.
Yeah.
Like a Warm Data. Mm. If it had like a drop D guitar over it, it would be a Tool song. Like, it absolutely has that kind of off rhythm. Dun, 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 dun.
Mm.
It has the. Has that vibe to it.
I think Warm Data actually is the first time they've thrown back to Needy in a while. Like that song is quite it's quite bright and it's a more, I don't want to say like hopeful, but it's definitely
serene.
Yeah, it's more serene than a lot of that other as stuff. Well,
they do both really well.
It's a good song though. It is a good song. I think there's I like the kind of Kraftwerky type synthesizers on Ultraviolet, which actually reminds me a little bit of the what was it called? The public service broadcasting record that we did a few weeks ago? Bright Magic? The
German one, yeah.
Bright Magic. Reminded me a little bit of that.
The German one.
The German, so calming. Really, really good. Just overall, massive shout-outs to Duncan Bellamy on the drums. I think his drum patterns always surprise so and delight.
Yeah. It keeps a drive and a momentum to really chill stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Monument... particularly I think the drum groove on that is so excellent, and that's probably the song that most reminds me of Art in the Age of Automation too.
Bringing it back to some of the great forms they've collected so far.
Yeah.
Fucking On the Light Last song, really, for instance, song, yeah. Get some of the pop melodies, like real hooky parts that they do really well, but they don't do it all the time.
Mm.
But that one really has some hooks and kind of builds really nicely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like honestly, with Portico Quartet, it's kind of a funny one. I almost feel similarly about them as I do about Uppermost. I sort of think you're in safe hands. You know, whatever they do, they'll do variations on a theme, but everything that they do to one degree or another is just excellent. And I just think they're a great, great band, and I love this. It's just like, it's so good.
Yeah, and with like Fox Capture Plan, they have a great sense of variation on the same core elements.
I actually need to listen back to that new FCP record. Did you? Was it good?
Fucking great.
Yeah.
Get on that. We might talk about it later in the weeks.
I will actually have to get on that because, as I mentioned, we have a little bit of listening and catching up to do. But,
yeah.
But listen, I don't have a whole heck of a lot more to say about this.
No, it's beautiful. It's thoroughly beautiful and possibly my favorite in a long, long while.
Yeah, I think this is my favorite since...
Art 2.
Yeah. I think this is my favorite.
And this is probably my favorite since self-titled.
And I need to go back to self-titled. I need to go back further than Art because I used to use
the self-titled as reading music. Just everything I read that had a kind of ominous by the ocean or something, right?
Yeah.
We keep that here.
It's real good. And not to say like, it is kind of ambient in its own way, but there's more than enough there if you really are paying attention that you'll get a lot out of this. I think it's just overall really good music. There's nothing more to it than that.
Yeah,
it's real good music.
What does the album cover make you think?
Monuments,
things.
You know, I think
this is really all about that.
I think it's Duncan. He does all the artwork, and you can tell there's a running theme, pretty consistent running theme throughout their artwork. So, it just looks like a piece of modern art, I suppose.
I like that. I like how much this speaks to me without having lyrics, describing monuments and what we consider them.
Yeah,
whether they be digital, warm data, or monument. Right. Ever present, right?
Yeah.
Things we need in life to keep us posted to a place in time
that
we can live with. Egging on about random stuff there, but yeah, this makes me feel that's kind of stuff.
That's what
it does. Right?
I mean, that's why that's what I love about instrumental music is you can often put your own sort of thoughts and feelings and emotions into what it is they're doing.
And this was the thesis with this one off the bat, was talking about monuments and weird stuff that goes with them.
Cool.
So exciting to have that as a basis.
I think they specifically they were recording this at the same time as Terrain, but I think they specifically said this is going to be the pop album. That this is going to be the tightly constructed version of what it is that we do, compared to the it's funny, like this year, I mean, between Devin Townsend and Portico Quartet, I mean, they didn't release them on the same day, but it's basically
Nine Inch
like
Nails last year.
Nine Inch Nails, DJ Sabrina the Teenage DJ releasing two albums on the same. It's like, it's the year of just doing two albums. I mean, Hello Meteor had, I think, three albums out this year. Lots of artists doing two albums, either simultaneous or just like a few months apart, which is making it very hard for those of us that are Weezer, also two albums. It's making life very difficult for those of us that have to compile them at the end of the year. But that's I digress. It's very good. I my favorite track is probably Ultraviolet.
Mm.
Yep. What about you?
Mine's On the Light.
On the Light.
Crescendo is really well. I'm giving this a 10.
Oh, damn!
Is it slam dunk, dude? Absolutely,
10 out of 10. Yeah. I'm gonna give it a 9.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it a 9.
But you agree with my 10?
Well,
don't dismiss it as
clearly
as
no. But I don't. Talk. I don't dismiss. No. I don't dismiss your 10. I think this is absolutely on a different day. It could be. I think it's a spectacular record from a great band. So yeah, I think a 10 is perfectly legitimate score. It's a 9 for me. It's a 10 from Dill for Monument by Portico Quartet, and that brings us along to our final review of the week, which is, and of the year, because we're not going to be reviewing anything really.
Oh shit, yeah.
We're just going to be recapping. So this is the final review of the year, Buds by Ovlov. And
what a thing for us to kind of choose, right?
Yeah,
it seems very Very typical of us.
Very typical of me, certainly.
Well, yeah, both of us, I guess. Right?
Yeah, for sure. Listen, did you know of Love at All before?
No.
I have to say, one of the fellas who was playing in another band at the Berlin gig told me that we reminded him of Love, and I thought that was one of the most that was one of the best compliments I think I'd ever received.
Okay, maybe but, I see that sort of
a little bit. We're not quite as fuzzed up as Avlov, but their last album, True, really I think is a bit of a modern classic. It's just fantastic record.
Yeah, I have that on my list to get. Oh,
it's so good. It's really really good. Perfect. So I just had an eye on them. Really, they kind of play a very 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 fuzzy kind of slacker emo rock type thing. It's sort of a poppy alternative rock. It's very laid back, easy going, but the guitars are very overblown and overdriven and stuff.
Yeah,
with a kind of a laid back vocal stylings.
Yeah.
And they often get female guest vocalists in. I think there's actually three different women do the backing vocals on this.
Initially I thought this was female fronted. Before you came to me, I was like, oh wait,
nope, it's actually three brothers and a dude, another guy, and they just so there's three guest singers on this. Is Alex Gehring, who's the singer in Ringo Death Star. I've blown hot and cold on that band over the years, but she is a good singer. And then two artists I don't know at all, Jordan Blakely and somebody else, Aaron McGrath.
Okay.
Who sing on the other track. So there's guest vocals on pretty much every track here. But I think really what this is I don't think it's going to be a very long review. I think this is another Avlov album. It's wistful, nostalgic, kind of very melodic, fuzzy kind of pop rock songs. I think that's kind of what it is from start to finish, and I think some of them really hit pretty well.
Yeah, they have a real musical poppy sense to this stuff, kind of like early Placebo did.
Oh yeah, sure, okay.
Maybe not as off the wall. Maybe the vocalist isn't as kind of more buried into the music with this.
Mm-hmm.
Soothing, more soothing than Brian was.
Oh yeah,
back then.
Yeah. The Brian Malco.
Mm.
I assume you got the reference of Cheer Up Chihiro.
Yeah.
So that's a Spirited Away.
Yeah, I did. I love that. Yeah. I absolutely fucking love that song.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
But you get a lot of variety from the same kind of things in this.
Yeah.
There's
actually that it's funny that song. Just I was looking and reading a couple of interviews. Apparently, that song Cheer Up Chihiro has been. They've been sort of trying to get it onto a record for a long, long time. This is their third album, but they've done lots of stuff. They've done lots of EPs and things. But apparently they were the sax solo is actually the three guys' dad. And they were recording it in like a basement or something back in. I think that solo is from like 2013 or 2014 or something. And the dad is a reasonably famous saxophonist, and he's a pretty famous jazz musician. And they were recording this song, and they said, "Oh, hey, Dad," he'd just come in from a gig and said, would you mind ripping a sax solo over this? And he literally one take. That was the first take.
But it's a little off kilter, but it's lovely.
Oh, I think it works so well.
It does.
It works so well. So shout out Ted Hartlett on that one. It's really, really good.
But this goes from like Placebo grunge land to Land of Steve-O, which is Wilson from Beach Boys, that style of blissful harmony mixed with a bit more of the grungy guitar.
Yeah,
so it's like, what if they were combined?
I think I love what they do. They do really well. Is they do these kind of mysterious kind of,
and it sounds a bit like who's your favorite band? You use them as your cover on your phone for a while. Their artwork.
Oh, our Roswell Kid.
Yeah, a bit of Roswell Kiddy.
Yeah, I hear that too. I actually just got two Roswell Kid shirts in the post the other day. I'm very happy with them. I think they do like a really interesting voiced chord thing, like on Eat More, that doo doo blah doo doo blah doo doo da. It's really really nice. Yeah. And then obviously the dumb fuzz solo.
That's great. Very Billy Corgan, right?
But almost like Billy Corgan with like a
center driven kind of compressed and overdriven.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Super, cool, like, that's clearly like a big muff or something.
Oh, just, it's fantastic.
Super, super fuzzy. Yeah, yeah.
Right in your face.
And it is like, there's another kind of like underwater solo, like, it almost sounds like it's sort of screaming at you from outside of a submarine porthole solo at the end of that song.
Yeah, so I'm glad they changed it up to that extent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, right, I have one weird criticism.
I do too. Because
it wasn't, the but production is very similar to True. But for some reason,
because I don't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the drums were vaguely stereo on True. I mean, you know, not, they were pretty centered. But on this, it sounds like the drums are mono, which is makes for a very weird listening experience.
Yeah, it feels a bit more. What's the word?
It just makes the drums very tinny and thin and almost washed out.
They're thin in more of a toned down sense. It's not as, maybe not as expansive.
I'm not used to hearing, right? I'm just not used to hearing drums where it sounds like the hi-hat and the crash are all on top of each other. So when the drummer, whose name I think is John, is playing the drums, it sounds like, no, sorry, it's Theo. As soon as he hits the crash, because they're in mono, at least to my ears, it sounds like the crash immediately overwhelms the whole rest of the kit. So
I think it makes it sound a bit more messed.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of works for it if you're going for a garage style.
No, I would have just, if it was me, I would have just, I don't know.
I instinctively don't do this, so I'm sure it's a choice to do that.
Yeah. I think it's an unusual choice.
It is.
Considering the guitars sound so big.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of double tracked. And then to have the drums just one like razor thin pixel right in the middle of the stereo, it sounds weird to me. I think they've been working with this guy Michael John Thomas III and for years. He's their long time producer.
Sure.
Do I think that maybe it's time for Avlov to give Will Yip a call? Yes. I think they need to work with somebody who is a bit more of a experienced sort of well-known international producer.
It's worth a shot.
Who can capture their scrappiness and their fuzziness, but do it in that kind of that next level way. I think that's what they need.
Yeah, break out of the bubble a bit.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah. I think Will Yip's the man to do it as well.
Still sounds fun, big, and driving. Yeah, for sure. Like fucking Moron Part 2.
Yeah, Moron Part 2.
Strokes. Yeah. Great drive to that.
Yeah,
it's kind of Block Party-esque.
It's kind of a slacker. Yeah, I think the production or the more so like their sound maybe masks the influences, because I think there are more influences than you just would necessarily think listening to it, where you kind of hear almost, it's almost like a desert, it's got that kind of stoner feel to it, because just from the tonality of it. But there's a lot more pop songwriting to it, I think, and indie influences like Block Party or what have you.
Hooray, Block Party are back, but that's news.
Hey, that's for probably early next year, right?
Yep. February.
Yeah. Listen, you know, I think it's really good. I think I had a little bit of a crash bang down to earth a little bit on the production side just today listening to it on headphones. So I'm feeling a bit weird about this, because I think I was ready to come in and give it like a 9.
Kind of gets there at points.
Yeah, and it does songwriting wise, but I think I need a little bit more time to get used to sort of what's actually coming out of the headphones.
Yeah.
When I actually sort of sat down and really concentrated on it today, because something's not quite sitting right with me on the production side. But I still think I would probably give it the benefit of the doubt and give it an 8, because I think the songwriting is definitely there.
Yeah, I'll give this a 7
just to mix it up.
Throw it down. Just to be contrarian with myself.
And what's your favourite track? Cheer, is it?
I'll go for that one.
I'll take Eat More. Eat More.
Eat Randy.
Eat More.
Great song.
Yeah, it is really good. Listen, it's very short as well. Check out True if you get a chance, because True is really excellent. But and that's great too. So that's Buds, the new album from Avlov, and that is the end of the show. So a couple of little bits of housekeeping. You know, obviously.
Wow, my.
Go on.
Sorry, it's just the album I'm working on is longer than this.
There you go.
So that's. I thought my album was not long at all, so that's weird.
Perspective. Yeah, you got some time. Well, I mean, the Pink Panthers album, was very good. No spoilers, but yeah. And that's what 18 minutes long, including a bonus track. So you know, time is no dictation. It's just, you know, what it's a bit, yeah. It's all about vibe.
It is.
So yeah, so our 2021 Kill Shuffle playlist is now complete. So I will be sort of putting that, enshrining that, and putting it into a new spot so that we can kind of begin afresh in 2022. Okay. And that is from what we will be drawing our top 20s, along with some other things that you and I have been doing, some extracurricular listening.
Yeah.
So don't worry, even if you've been following along all year, there will still be some interesting surprises.
Possibly a lot.
Possibly
knows?
A lot in our top 20.
Like, not like Devin Townsend released a double album just this morning.
It's no.
He did
not,
a thing.
Not like that at all. Yeah, so there'll be some really fun surprises. We'll do our a couple of specials like we always do. So definitely do join us for that in a few weeks' time. I think last year, well, actually, we released it on January 1st this year. So we might do that again. We might go a little bit closer to Christmas. We'll just see how schedules line up. But regardless, I'm really looking forward to digging back through the year's releases. We'll talk a little bit about that process. I think
I'm not.
When we sit down again.
But I am, but I'm not. You know.
Yeah.
January, May is going to be weird to go back to, but I'll get there. We'll all get there.
Yeah, it's been a weirdly stacked winter, like, yeah, so far for releases, which is really throwing my list into disarray. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'm really glad that it was such a strong slate of records this week. Lots of fun to talk
this
about.
This year, to be frank.
You know, and it's such a subjective thing. I think the mental state that you're in has a huge bearing on what you gravitate towards and what you enjoy and all the rest of it. So,
exactly.
So that'll make for an interesting story. Yeah. But in the meantime, you know, do reach out to us. We always like to hear if anything you enjoyed this year, if there's anything that you think we might have missed and that we really need to be considering for our top 20s. You know how to find us. We're at Kill Shuffle on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, although really and truly, who's on Facebook anymore? So Twitter's probably the place to go. And of course, we are also on Spotify. So thank you very much for joining us, Dylan. Any parting words for the boys and girls?
Yeah, don't join us on Meta. Join us in the Metaverse.
Just avoid the Metaverse.
We're not in the Metaverse.
You'll get fired in virtual reality if you're not careful. Exactly. All right, talk to you in a few weeks.
Slum.
Bye.